I would like to talk about agency and family, because I had a family event, a wedding, and I had my family there, one of my children being married, and there was 250 people, and of those 250 people, only one table was my family, and that also included my best friend Doug and my business partner Sarah. So we were a pretty small tribe in it, and then there was just all these people there, and there was kind of a collective unconscious. There was the dynamics of a wedding, and I don't know when the last time, like we've been talking about, how to navigate the matrix, and I think for me, over the last 5 years since the pandemic, because I stopped traveling so much, I just don't really do socializing or any kind of sanctioned holidays or events. So going to a wedding, and even when I was younger and like was a musician or whatever, I was a vendor. I went to weddings because I was playing music at them and stuff. But so to go into this kind of sanctioned thing called marriage and wedding, and then there's all these rites and rituals and passage, and the way that people are so scripted in it, and whoever puts the wedding on, like there's a magnetism that everybody kind of surrounds himself around. So there's all this bullshit, shallow conversation that are going on that is the way people are trying to agree with the dream, the row, row, row your boat dream that's being sold as the wedding. And it's not to say that the vows of the wedding weren't moving, or that I don't want, two people who want to spend their life together and commit to that. I think that can be celebrated in a deeply meaningful, sacred way. But this wasn't that to me. And there's like this outer door, like the public, and then it gets closer in, and then there's navigating individual relationships like siblings, children. And I felt like I was in a learning curve, and maybe our podcast has something to do with it too, just like there, it's just the continual peeling back of what's not real. And I guess last piece to say, and then I'll just, you can give me your first thoughts on it, is that the more I peel it back, the deeper the lessons are. So I think that I felt almost like this is like one of the last lessons, because it's within certain areas, and all of us have this, where we feel the shoulds and shouldn'ts, like should not be broken. And for me, that would be if doing something that displeases somebody that I really love and have blood ties with and am intimate with, and like, but they want me to be X, Y, or Z, and I feel like in the collaboration I should be more compromising or more willing to just, let certain things go. But what I realized in doing that was I had much more pain than I would have had if I had just stuck to just been my real self the whole time. So I did give parts of me away thinking I was making things work. It was a generosity from my heart, but the thing is, that's a pattern for me. Does that make sense? Like, I have a pattern of being generous from my heart in a kind of a loving but naive way. And I've suffered a lot in that in my life, and it's always in the hardest place to to let that go is wherever things get most intimate, wherever they go more deeply inside you. Because doing things to the outer door of the public, like I got this neighbor guy I think I told you about, and he, you know, he's follows me around the neighborhood. The irony is 3 years ago I ran into the guy and he wouldn't even talk to me. He didn't, I said hello as I was passing several times. And now I see him and I don't want to talk to him. I feel like it's turned around, but it's like, you know, I'm okay with it because it's just not that consequential. So,
yeah, I think once family gets involved, the whole, we're talking about a whole different game in terms of the dude in the mirror standing back. Like, I guess you could consider the family the original Matrix.
Yeah.
Because to think that what we get plopped into, like, I'm surprised I'm still here, have no serious chemical dependencies. Like, yeah. And really the only empowering, I think, way to view any of that has to be that I chose this somehow at some level at some time. Otherwise, it's just insane that in my story, I showed up in a culture of fear 24/7. And here I am at 49, knowing that I've been working through that for decades, probably by choice, as best I can tell. However, if I accept that, then I can look at all these things and say, oh, well, the universe sent this to me today. And it completely changes the way I greet this stuff. And it loses the weight. Because I don't know, like the family matrix has to be, that's a different level, obviously, than the vibrational relationship we have with people that either we don't know or aren't genetically related to, like something, obviously, because we can't get away from it. Yeah. And I did go away from it figuratively and physically, but the minute those genes reappear, like in my physical presence or even on the phone, I'm back, which is bizarre to witness when you're as far down the rabbit hole as I feel I am. Like you're instantly snapped back like a time machine to these patterns that you realize are still there. Have never left. Maybe they'll never leave. Like maybe the gift of our life is living the human experience with the patterns. And that we have learned, oh, it's really smart not to like stick around here and here and here if we don't want this all the time. Maybe that's all we've done. I don't know. Because they're still there, surprisingly.
One question I have a story, and actually it's good because it's not about me. It's about my nephew and his father. Well, I'll tell the story and then I'll ask you the question. So, because they're connected, but we were in a family gathering and my son and my brother's son were playing chess. And, my son's very competitive, but my nephew is very smart, like very, very smart. And everybody just sort of turned to watch, and my brother kind of inserted himself into the game in a way that felt violating for my nephew. And he snapped back at him like so intensely. And later, because I had a day with him on my own before he left, we talked about it because I have a very close relationship with him. And he asked me, I mean, he was sort of grappling with, because he lives abroad. He's a nomad. He like hitchhikes all over the world. He's a really unusual guy and very smart. But part of, I think, of his nomadic lifestyle is having grown up inside a very much more rigid matrix than I did. And the thing is, he's so gentle and present and slow. But that moment, it was the complete opposite. And he was sort of working through what that was about. And we kind of came to is that I said, you know, you're snapping back because if you don't, you feel this pain of being, of like it touches a wound. And so it's not necessarily empowered to do that, because what if you did actually accept that as what you just said, like accept that this has been delivered to you and feel it, then the energy can reorganize itself. And I could see he really lit up around that. And so my question is, you know, you're saying, you know, maybe you just live with the patterns. Like, actually, it's a few questions. One part of the question is, you know, when you say the universe is giving this to me in some way, and you know that, but do you ask the question at that moment, like, what for? Like, are you trying to make meaning of it in that moment, or are you just using that as a way to circumvent certain processes and just let this be big, let it be connected? And so I'm wondering about sort of the difference between, say, figuring something out or finding the value of something versus just simply accepting it. And I don't know if you can see why I'm connecting that to the story, but I'll just sort of stop there and see what you say.
Yeah, I think the first reason that I do that is to make sure my perspective on life is the way I want it, meaning like it's not happening to me, right?
You're not losing your the perception that you have that you know is the truth. The truth for you is that existence is always helping you. Yeah.
Yes, that's what I feel. That's a knowing that I'm not interested in. I could dissect it, but it's just like a deep knowing. Like
I would say that that's what a prayer is. I think that's a prayer, what you did, because you're really asking to remove the interference between you and the truth in that moment, because
that's
you're smart
right.
enough
I think,
to know that.
Well,
I
think the universe is sending the truth for what somehow. I don't understand the machinations of it. So that gets my perspective in the right spot.
Yeah.
To receive everything is something that I probably asked for. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, then the next thing is, what do you do with that? I mean, I don't view, like, to me, acceptance is an active thing that does, I don't think it, I think that has a very, it has a very weak connotation in the way we use that word.
Like, so it's maybe passive and it's just like letting things happen.
Yeah. Like, acceptance is meeting something without resistance. Like, to me, it doesn't have that whole extra story of, well, this is just the way it's going to be. I feel like my lessons are to not be owned by these patterns, and whether or not I shift them or remove them, or even if that can be done. I mean, if we're talking about genetic imprinting at the time of birth or who knows when, like, that's like software in a computer, and maybe you can change some of it and maybe you can't. I don't profess to know the truth, but you can certainly change its relationship with you and you with it. And so transcend it, move through it. I don't want to be owned by it. And so I need to like reconfigure my own sense of autonomy in the midst of this friend that's supposedly here to teach me, to figure out my way.
I'm assuming that's not an instantaneous thing.
No way. I was just angry for the first couple decades.
Like, well, but even now, even is it, what is it now? Like, let's say, because I had several encounters that were just.
It is just
actually,
like in martial arts, like with the punch coming in, right?
Yeah.
The first thing you do is you don't get hit by it.
Yeah.
From there, everything else is figured out. So,
well, it's funny because I got punched a couple times and I was in shock the first time.
I have that same naivete.
Yeah, I think the first time your teacher hits you in martial arts, it's a shock, right?
Yeah.
Right. So,
well, and part of me is so naive, I can't conceive that another human would do that. So I'm always caught off guard, which is
hilarious.
You
still get shocked.
Yes, you do.
And then let's just, I mean, I want to take me through the dumbest part of your process, meaning, so right now at 49, there's a lot of things worked through. But what I was asking is if it was an instantaneous process now. So because when you get a shock, which, and you're saying maybe that does happen now, how what's your process of getting back to the truth? Like, how long does it take and how do you go about that? Tell me about your worst patterns when you're in the moment.
It takes me about 20 minutes these days, and that's quick for where I started.
Okay. Yeah, 20 minutes is very good.
And it only takes, like, I consider that not a lot anymore because I have learned to, number one, you know, when you get that bolt of energy in your body and you get hot or whatever your response is, like, if I have to let, I have to totally allow that to be.
Yeah.
If I feed that with anything, it just lives forever. And I've probably carried stuff like that for years. So that is step one. Like, you have got to just feel, I don't know what the right word is. Yeah, you have to develop the capacity to hold that without attaching.
That's exactly what I told my nephew. It's like, if you can feel that, you're free. Because then you have nothing to be afraid of. You have no resistance. If you don't mind feeling pain, and pain just meaning memory. It's just memory in your body. That's all it is. It's not really real because it's coming from another time. It's just stored up energy. But if you can say, okay, I want to feel this, as you say, sort of in an active way, then you do get somewhat emancipated.
We have a friend who's a worldwide known meditation teacher, and he told a story.
What's their name? No, I'm just kidding.
That's funny. He told a story once about...
Oh, it's a he, is it?
Yeah. About carrying a knife. And, you know, if you use that knife to etch a pattern in stone, it's going to be there for hundreds of years. If you use that knife to etch a pattern in the sand, it'll be there until the wind comes along and blows it away. If you take that knife and drive it deeply into the ocean, that goes just as deep, but it disappears in a moment. Mm. And his point was to be that. Feel deeply and just let that sign, that wound, just disappear into nothing. Which I've found helpful.
Yeah, you know, I had a lot of difficulty this weekend and difficulty to move through it, which is surprising for me because I, like you, after many years, things can happen very fast, sometimes even instantaneously, but it did not. And I realized, and I was giving my nephew this advice the day after the wedding about feeling, and I realized just now when you're speaking, I think I'm in resistance, like, I'm upset about how I was treated in various things. And like, I haven't really just let myself suffer. I'm suffering and I'm talking about it, but the resistance is I'm trying to do something about it before I've accepted it. And just in this moment, I feel a little giddy inside because I can feel the energy already moving right now while we're in the middle of the podcast that, oh, I can just suffer because that is to me my superpower. I'm not afraid to feel, but some part of me is, and I've been in some resistance the last couple of days. So thank you for that.
For me, it always ends up like me laughing at myself because what I'm actually doing is arguing with reality, which is so insane but so habituated. So you know, I'm always trying to get back to that remembering.
Yeah. One of the things that was sort of not surprising that I noted with all these humans I was with is that people in conversation, almost exclusively, hundreds of people would talk. The only conversation was to label something, like to talk about what something was. I actually didn't feel like people were experiencing things, nor were they experiencing me. So, I mean, a woman came up to me after I gave my wedding speech and asked me if I was a pastor. and then when I said no, like she didn't really want to have any more conversation with me, but then she talked for another 10 minutes. But it was this feeling that if you're going to feel things, well, you said what triggered this is arguing with one way you can argue with reality is try to keep describing what's happening in the moment. Like instead of looking at a tree, saying, oh, that's a tree, that's an oak tree. And spend your life saying, and there were so many conversations I overheard and witnessed or were a part of where people were just saying, you know, what kind of car do you drive? Where do you go? And like, where are you from? What do you do? And like everybody's label, and no experiencing. And to me, that's the ultimate in arguing with reality because people want to be secure in what they think things are instead of actually experiencing it, which means feeling it.
Yeah. You're describing the point where the lesson I'm at currently, which is,
I thought you were leading us. You have lessons. Uh-oh.
That's funny. Yeah. I'm pushing the cart.
For me then.
I'm pushing the cart. I'm way back there somewhere.
I thought I was behind you and I was following you. You were pushing the cart.
I feel like I've worked really hard on like my own little microcosm here.
Yeah.
And what is less clear to me is how to remove all resistance between my microcosm and what everybody else is doing.
Say that again.
Well, please. It's like for a little while, when you first start down this road, it's very easy to be like, even if you don't say it because you're too polite, like you feel like you know things other people don't. You feel like you're in a place that they're never going to be. Like,
yeah.
And then eventually you realize, boy, I'm just as stupid as they are because I'm getting off on this stupid whatever story I'm telling myself now about how cool I am.
Yeah. You're right? Special.
So you keep working on your insides. You get even more closer to maybe some truth for yourself. And then you go out there with all the other people. And I have words for these people. I've labeled them. I've made jokes about them. And then I realize, holy crap, dude, like you're staring at your own next obstacle, which is just let them be on their journey.
Yeah.
And give up the stories. And your story has nothing to do with theirs. And you don't even know who they are. So maybe just shut your mouth. So we're working through that because we get around a lot of people here. We're in a crowded place. And they're all in a very different situation. So I'm taking the charge out of difference, the difference that I feel.
You said this is what you're going through right now.
Yeah, I think it's like my relationship with them. I mean, in one way, it is my relationship with those who are here to be in the matrix and okay with it.
Yeah.
Like, who am I to say that that's, why would I argue with reality?
You know, I think what was a challenge for me was in this several days that I was in this thing is that the longer I'm in it, that other people's creations, their matrix, the harder it is for me to think clearly and like you said, you want to let people live the life that they want to live. Like I don't want to interfere with anything that other people want to do or what they believe in. But if you're caught in and you have nowhere to go, for me, the challenge is not to be overtaken by it energetically, like to maintain my own atmosphere and aura and truth, because there's such a power, particularly to the collective energy, because there's a group energy that has a magnetism to it that affects my electromagnetic.
See, maybe we should just start something. We'll call it MuggleCon. And every year we can invite just a cross sampling of the general populace. And then everybody who thinks they've been working on themselves can get VIP passes to come and build their resilience and figure out just how to be with other humans who might not be on the same road.
Folks, if you're out there and you want to join our workshop, if you want to get more resilient,
because
we've got a workshop for you.
It reminds me of those people who cut out everything they're eating and then like 2 years later, they can't eat anything.
Well, and we want to say one of the things you're going to have to do when you join your workshop is you have to enroll one family member to come to this workshop with you.
That's right.
But and it can't be somebody you get along great with.
But I think there with family, I think there has got to be something going on at a level that just is way different in terms of how you access it, because these are not conscious choices that are making. These are energetic connections that are getting activated, right? And so it's fascinating how that all works.
You know, you talked a bit about this last time, and I had several people comment on it, because I was talking about being Jewish and stuff, and like you were talking about the energetics. And I want to say that I think that DNA is consciousness, and I think blood is consciousness, and whatever your tribes are, whatever you're connected in blood, it's the ultimate challenge to authoring reality is to move beyond. It's not even the physiological level that ties you to a tribe. It's some kind of karma, I think. Like that, if I'm Jewish, for example, because, you know, I was amongst Jews, and like, I don't necessarily act Jewish, but in some ways I absolutely am connected to it. Like there's just this pulse and this feeling energetically. And I think that I don't know if I'm supposed to get away from it in any way, but I do know that the ultimate non-identification is to be able to go beyond the DNA. To me, that is soul level transformation, when you don't identify with these things that are actually what have made you up at a physiological level.
It reminds me of this book called The Presence Process by Michael Brown. It was kind of like my first foray into present moment awareness. The book actually fell off a bookshelf and hit my wife in the head. So we took that as a sign to read it. And this dude had some terrible debilitating autoimmune disease. And this was the result of his journey to heal himself. And one of the ideas that he presented in there that I'm sure is an ancient one, because that's basically what he collected and like repurposed, was the idea that whenever we were growing up and we reached out for love, whatever we got is our cell's memory of what love is, whether it was a cigarette in the arm or a hug. And it almost reminds me of when we get around our family, it's like kind of like an epigenetic activation or something weird is happening.
Yeah.
That there's a knowing there that I belong with you and we're linked this way. Maybe that's an explanation for why these things come back so readily.
Well, I think that I'll say, you know, there were places, relationships within my family that were triggering before that aren't triggering now. So I noticed that. But other places, one person in particular who, like, what I am asking is, in the what's it for part, is that, like, I guess I want to say, if you have this thing that you're called epigenetics, like with certain people, to me, I think it is something you agreed to work through this life, and you can't escape it until you see what your own contribution to the dynamic is. And that's something I was looking at, is like, what's my lesson? Like, because it can't be, I think the thing is no matter what people do when they're around you, they can't do it without you participating. Yeah, as long as you're emotionally affected, as long as you feel something that causes you some suffering, then you are identified with it, which means that you need to learn what you're identified with.
The rest of my silly process for making what used to be days or weeks of this little loop into way shorter is that once I feel it, then I remember, you know how you can, you know, connect with that awareness, like if you're sitting in a chair and you can sense that awareness behind you that's looking at you, like, so I go back there just for a second to remind myself of what my universal self feels like. And then I look down at my silly little meat suit, like having this human experience that I supposedly chose. And I'm like, okay, well, clearly I was supposed to learn something there. What is it? And just that shift in arrangement, like now my big self, no longer stuck in that little world of the little self. And just for a second, I can like refocus and reground like appropriately in terms of putting some of my awareness back on my big self and watching this movie that just played out that I was so stuck in at the moment that I thought it was the entirety of reality.
Well, again, I think it sounds like you have this prayer, and I'm saying prayer because I think any act of concentration is a prayer. And I think that in that, what I like about your prayer or your invocation, if you will, is that it invites curiosity because you're asking to know more than what your little meat suit self has made of it. And that like, okay, if it's not a prayer or invocation, it's definitely an invitation.
And again, just like, I mean, it's crazy how many parallels there are to martial arts. But now that I'm thinking about it, like when, like in martial arts, if a punch came in, yeah, you could say you felt it or blocked it or whatever. But at least in the art that I was taught, the next thing you did was not the habit of most people, which is to back away and go somewhere. You actually went into it. You like went closer, which is kind of what I guess is happening when you like start inspecting a thing and seeing what is there for you. So again, not the habit that I was ever raised with, just learned by trial and error.
Well, backing away is resistance, and also moving forward into things is a knowing, but it's counterintuitive because it's like, you know, when people get hit by a drunk driver, it's the drunk person who doesn't get injured because they're relaxed. They're not in resistance to it. They're not pushing away it. And the other person goes rigid. So it is hard to lean into something that your animal nature is going to tell you is threatening you. Right?
Yeah.
I mean, the punch is coming, you know, brace yourself or move away from it. But we're not saying, hey, by the way, move into all the most painful things you can and like let people hurt you. We're not, this isn't some morbid conversation.
I feel like this is a very strong maneuver to do something like this. You're very, very whole and composed inside.
And it's becoming familiar with the thing that you feel is a threat, which is empowering because it gives you knowledge.
Well, and like, I mean, I spend a lot of time in the business world.
Do you know?
So I've spent many years as I was trying to navigate that dealing with all of my lack programming. So like waking up to a negative $900 checking account was in my reality, you know? And so back then it triggered all the programs. Yeah. Now when whatever I perceive,
it just triggers all the overdrafts. No, sorry.
Well, whatever is triggered now is different. And instead of saying, I have to go get money, I can feel that separation and examine this thing that is the feeling of I have to go get money. And it leads to a different experience of life.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, I think we can end there, but I just maybe want to just say it back to you and just see if this is, if there's anything else you want to say, because I feel like there's the teaching in there, like your first response to things within the matrix that tell you everything is not okay was to do something about it and to have some linear response that's part of the very matrix that is bringing you the problem. But now there's a whole other way. And the first thing I think you said you do is you remember that
I feel it first. Yeah.
And to feel it and to accept it, not in a passive way, in an active way.
I almost, I actually view me breathing it in. Like that's what I do. I suck it all into my being. And like over the years, I feel like my capacity to do that has increased from doing all the stuff we do.
Yeah.
You know, it's not just standing there taking the punch. It's actually like, not that you would invite a punch in. That's not what I'm saying, but you're like accepting the totality of all of it. Like the more you can pack in there, I feel the more can be integrated. So like, that's a goal actually.
I think just because I think we've said this several ways, but not, I'm going to make it really clear. We're making a distinction between wanting to suffer or cause pain or be stupid even to put ourselves in harm's way and accepting that which is, that which comes to you with a relaxed nature. And so meaning if something seems like it's bad or it's hurt or it's going to hurt you or it's wrong, you say yes to it. But we're not suggesting that you should get as much harm as you can possibly get. That's for our workshop. But but seriously, I think there's a distinction between creating pain for yourself for no reason and what you're talking about, which is to allow
life. That's all. We're allowing the universe.
And accept that you are the author of it, even if you don't know how or why or what to do about it.
Or when. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or when. What else are you going to do? Who or else where? Is authoring it?
Yeah. Well, the person who's at fault, obviously. Who caused me this problem. All right.
Very good.
All right.
Well, we're getting somewhere. We might be going in circles, but it's a spiral. Yeah. We're heading up.
Yes.
Yes.
So we hope.
Hopefully. All right. See you next time.